We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Handley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's some fun drops from our guy.
Apparently the Eagles Kempo weren't very quotable.
David Haw writes the In the Wake of the News column for the Chicago Tribune, their lead sports columnist and longtime contributor. David, how are you?
Morning, guys. How are things in toasty Chicago?
Oh, comparatively warmer. Yeah, I guess. We talked to Dan Pompey. He said that it's close to Antarctica, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. I was with Dan last night, and we were relieved to walk back in our hotel and feel our fingertips again.
And this is why I feel very excited about the prop bet that the weather will be mentioned. I think that it's extraordinary cold, and all we have to do is get the weather mentioned, and you can cash on that. So I would highly recommend people get to the window on that one.
That's a gimme. That's as much of a gimme as anything.
Even though it's – because they'll say
– unless the NFL doesn't want they
– No, they'll say it's 72 indoors, but outside – you're bound to hear it from somebody at some point in that broadcast. So – that's an easy one. David, let's start the conversation, though. We'll get to all your Super Bowl stuff. And I just think that the Nico trade is something we are not on board enough this morning because we're getting too Super Bowl heavy. So let's talk Nico. If I had told you at the beginning of the year, if I told you after Bobby Portis punched the guy that you'd eventually get a first-round pick for him, would you have laughed at me?
Well, look, guys, you have to talk Bulls on the flagship station. So
nice. Well played. Hey, tomorrow at 2:15 will
absolutely
be the debut of the Bulls on the Score.
Molly, this is a great deal for the Bulls because you go back to in October, and when this happened, and even after it happened, the amount of dysfunction that we feared, projected, and anticipated, and you know, I remember writing about it. You know, there was not any expectation that this was going to end anything but badly. And to the Bulls' credit, however it happened, they got through this, and they didn't do a lot of, you know, manipulating, putting the guys in the room and doing other things. They let it play out. It played out uncomfortably. Nico Mirotic made clear from day one he wanted to move on, and I think the Bulls always sensed that. So when he came back and he played really well, and you have to give Nico a lot of credit for his role in this as well. He was a pro on the court. He was a pro off the court. He got better because he was more confident, because Jimmy Butler wasn't here for whatever reason. But I think they kept the focus on basketball. The Bulls were relentless in trying to find a trade partner. And this is a good deal. When you get a first-round draft pick for a team that's in the midst of a rebuild, I don't care if it's, you know, 17 or 27, this is an asset. And I think when you look at that, you have to applaud a management team that gets a ton of criticism in town, and a lot of it has been earned. A lot of it can be unfair, but credit to the Bulls for pulling this one off.
Yeah, no doubt, David. I mean, it's a great return for Nico, and here's my only thing, and I was trying to think. The last athlete we've talked and fretted over as much as we have Nico Mirotic for the actual star power or production that he provided. I mean, in December we heard more from Nico in 3 weeks than we had in 3 years. And whenever we talked about him, it was, you know, what's with this guy? He's the most inconsistent guy. You see flashes. You know, he was hyped well above what the substance was before he even arrived in Chicago. So, you know, good luck to Nico and whatever career he has left. But, you know, in the great history of the Chicago Bulls, I mean, will we even remember 5 years from now that he was the center of attention for as long as he was?
You're right, Brian. I use the word mystery to describe kind of his tenure. It sort of mystery did shroud every year that he was here because he came with a lot of fanfare and expectation, and he was oversold by Gar Foreman, I believe. You know, he was sort of a symbol of unfulfillment, and we have had a lot of those guys come through town. But I think that's what even makes this the trade even all the more impressive is that he was sort of, you know, a guy who didn't reach his potential, and yet the Bulls are going to be able to get something out of this experience, and that's a positive. The Bulls are a team that I think knows how to rebuild. You look back, and Brian, you can relate to this, in 2003 to 2005. Yep. They did it well, you know, and even they just couldn't finish off the job with Derrick Rose for reasons that, you know, we don't need to go over again. But this is a rebuild that's on the right track.
And I think the other element of this, which is kind of extraordinary, I don't think I realized how good the Bulls were with Nico. They were 14-11 as opposed to 4-22. And I don't really like this idea of tanking or anything like that, but look, they're going to be worse without him, right? They're not going to get better because Jameer Nelson can launch the ball.
No, absolutely right, Mullen. But I think, you know, that's a byproduct of this. I think when he played and as confident as he was, everything came together. I think the recent struggles are as much because Chris Dunn isn't there as much as maybe, you know, you look at some other factors. But, the Bulls are going to accept what happens and probably happily. But this is the direction they had to go. And, you know, they're not done yet, as you heard John Paxson on the teleconference yesterday kind of imply. And I think that's a good sign. And this is all headed in the right direction.
John Paxson will join us at 8 o'clock, David. I'm glad you brought that up. And, of course, we are the flagship station of the Bulls, and they will be playing tomorrow at 2:15.
First game right here on the Score. First of many.
Okay, let's get back to the Super Bowl. When you look at these two teams, you know, we talked to Gerald McCoy yesterday, and he said if the game's close in the fourth quarter, you know you're going to get out-coached in the fourth quarter. I believe that. And you also know that Tom's not going to panic, and there's going to be a certain sense of confidence among his teammates who have watched him come back and win games. We've seen teams lose their composure late in games against the Patriots. Will that happen to Philadelphia?
Well, I expect it to, Mully. And that was a great interview with McCoy yesterday. I thought he really put things out there in a candid way. You know, it's just because you can make the case, as people have this week, and I know you guys have talked to a lot of Eagles supporters, people picking the Eagles, and you have a ton of respect for what they've done without Carson Wentz and what they've done with him. This is a defense that can control a football game. It's a running game that's probably underrated. You know, if you pick one thing that you wanted to eliminate offensively from them, you know, you don't want their wide receivers to break the game open because they're certainly capable of it. From a football perspective, you can make the argument the Eagles are going to win Sunday. But there's something about the Super Bowl that goes beyond that. And I don't think that when you have, you know, the NFL's potential, arguably the best coach in NFL history, and the best quarterback in NFL history, on this stage, I would not bet against them. And I just think that's the intangible that I can't get past. All the logical arguments make sense. Everybody you've talked to is, you know, concise and can make their points. But Brady and Belichick, and I think that that's the overriding reason. The Patriots aren't going to make the mistake in the fourth quarter. It's not going to matter what happens in the first half. There's always going to be that chance of them coming back. And Belichick is, you know, now he's going to take his, he's relaxed. He went to the Timberwolves game last night. The other Tom in his life, Thibodeau, is, on board. So this is a team, I think, that's on a mission. You don't have to like the Patriots, as I wrote yesterday, to respect them. And I think we're seeing one of the, you know, greatest things in sports right now, and probably going to see that Sunday night.
And Gronk's cleared to play, obviously, and you know the playmakers, you know, Amendola and Gronkowski. But you got to make Tom Brady uncomfortable, and you can't if you wait to the fourth quarter and he's still within a couple scores, that's not going to be uncomfortable enough. So does Doug Peterson get really aggressive, because we know Tom will stand in the pocket to the last possible second, but he wants to get that ball out quickly. But he will throw from a crowd. So how do they go about? Can they cut the head off the snake and not worry about the other guys?
I think you've got to, Brian. I think that when you look at, you know, the coaching move that you want to be talking about Monday morning if you're an Eagles fan is the boldness with which the Eagles attacked Tom Brady and how Jim Schwartz won them the Super Bowl by, you know, abandoning reason and logic and fear and going after him early and often. And aggressively, because, you know, you look back at Super Bowls, and I think it was the Rams when you kind of lose track of the Patriots' victories. But remember back when Belichick just decided, well, I'm going to take a chance. I'm just going to mug the wide receivers at the line of scrimmage, and if I get called for that every play, we get called for that every play. You know what? It worked. It worked. Now, that's only used as a point of comparison. Something different, something innovative, something maybe you're not going to give Tom Brady something he hasn't seen. but maybe something he hasn't seen in the last, you know, four games for the Eagles, or something that's different from a blitz package, or you have to move him off the spot. You have to make him uncomfortable, and you have to make him look 40. And I don't know that they can do that, but that's the only way they're going to win.
I was saying to Brian earlier, I just thought went through my head, I probably have been to every game Brian Urlacher played in his career. And I think you have too.
Yeah.
Does he make the Hall of Fame? Does he not make the Hall of Fame? What do you think?
I think he does, Mike. I think that it's you know, certainly a provincial argument. We talked about it before. You feel like you're talking from a Chicago point of view, and you say absolutely. That's not a consensus, but it certainly is fair. This is a guy that revolutionized the position, the middle linebacker position, and maybe revolutionized is too strong. He modernized it. This is 6'4", 258-pound. You know, college safety who came in and he roamed sideline to sideline, and they asked him to do everything in Lovie Smith's cover two defense, and he did it. Not always gladly, not always willingly, but he did it. And this is the symbol of the Bears defense during the Lovie Smith era. He's the reason they got to the Super Bowl in 2006. He's the reason they were in the NFC Championship game in 2010. His absence is the reason they stink over the last 7 years. You know, they have not met consistently been the team. He's been the most important figure for the Bears over the last 15 years. And I think he goes in, even though Ray Lewis is going to get in, maybe Randy Moss, but I think Brian Urlacher deservedly is going to get the good news tomorrow night.
All right, David, we got you down for New England, right? And what is the
31-27, okay. Pats. I think it's going to be a good game, one possession, but I think New England prevails.
All right, David, thank you, pal.
Have a good one, guys.
Thanks,
that
David.
Is our guy, David Haw, from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to be bringing in Marcus Mariota in just a little bit. We're going to talk to the Tennessee quarterback about what he learned from Mark Helfrich when he was at Oregon. We'll ask him about why he wasn't drafted by the Bears. Wasn't there talk of that? Does he wish he were? No, we're not going to do that. Mully and Hanley on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. That is the voice of Bill Belichick. And he doesn't have a grandson, but he does obviously like Bon Jovi. He was very enthusiastic, and that's the thing we talked about with Bill. Ask him Justin Timberlake. You know, ask him about Bon Jovi, something he's interested in, and it's bounce. It doesn't even hesitate to give you an answer, and an enthusiastic one for Bill, I thought. Ask him about football, and the guy will talk football. He can talk football all day. Ask him some dumb question about his grandchildren, that hey. A non-existent grandson, and he's not going to be as forthcoming.
Hey, Bill, which rule are you going to try to push to its limit on Sunday?
It's funny, Brian, because obviously we've talked about this before, but I have served as the pool reporter in Super Bowl week, and usually Dan Pompey would do that. Sometimes he would come into to town later in the week, and I would get a chance to fill in for him. And one year I remember going to practice down in Jacksonville and covering Belichick. And, you go down there, you got to be very careful about you go through the entire roster. You make sure everyone's accounted for. You make sure that the depth chart is accounted for and they're putting everybody out there and they're all kind of lined up the way you want. If someone misses a practice, if someone, I don't know. It goes off to Mexico in the middle of practice. You want to know
because you're the only
guy
you're
didn't
the,
show up.
You're the only reporter allowed in there. So you're the eyes and ears for the rest of the media.
Wait, where was this, Mully?
So this was in Jacksonville.
Oh, jeez. See, I walked right into it. Yeah,
I knew he was. I knew what was coming.
Sure,
I knew it was coming.
Why?
I played along because that's my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Kebo and I do the Screamers and Howlers podcast, and we are. We're actually thinking about doing a promotion connected to that where we would take some people out to dinner. We would base it on people that joined our Twitter feed. I think
Kobe Burgers?
People we already have on Twitter, and then maybe have a contest for people joining the Screamer and Howlers.
Bangers and Mash.
We'd go out to we'd go to some place like that. We'd go have a pint and some bar food. But at any rate,
well, I believe they serve that where we had the Kobe burger or where one person had a Kobe burger.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a good spot to go to. Maybe we'll do that. And it's close enough that we could do it for lunch or dinner or whatever. At any rate, back to my story. So I go to this practice and I'm monitoring everything and trying to – and really, it's just an exercise in making sure you don't make a fool of yourself. You just don't want to get caught up in – and feeling like you missed anything and that something got past you. So I was very attentive, and I'm sitting there. And what took me by surprise was was how chill the whole experience was. And they were really just kind of laid back. Was that the did they play Philadelphia in that Super Bowl? I believe they did. And it was one of these things where I think Matt Light was the left tackle on those teams, and he was doing a Harry Carey impersonation while they were stretching, and they were playing music throughout the course of the practice, and they had like a lot of Bon Jovi playing, and in like, you know, there'd be guys playing air guitar, and you know, they were so laid back and so calm, and just it was not the kind of thing that I expected from the New England Patriots. I didn't expect them to be tense, but and they were very professional. It was very sharp practice. But and Jim Miller was there. It was hilarious because Jim Miller like walks up to me like, "What are you doing here?" You know, Jim played on those tapes, and I was like, "Oh, the pool reporter. I'm just stealing your secrets." But at any rate, I remember coming out of that practice and talking to Belichick, and he was not pleased with the facilities and all that stuff. So we had a good chance to talk to him. And the other thing that really stood out to me, I called Chris D'Amico, our buddy, which is why I really chose the Eagles, because he was such an Eagles fan. And fly, Eagles, fly. We lost Chris just recently, and it's painful. But I called Chris, and I told him, "You guys are in serious trouble. You're going to lose this game. This New England team is –
they're late.
They are not in
There's
any
no
kind of panic.
Here.
They are not stressed at all. They are really sharp, professional, and not overwhelmed by the moment." And he didn't want to hear it, but I did call him and tell him that. Let's get to Joe with a scoreboard update, and we'll bring in Marcus Mariota.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mullen and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome in Marcus Mariota. He, of course, the Titans quarterback, and he's in Minneapolis for the Super Bowl. Marcus, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
We are doing great and delighted to talk to you. And there's many things to get to, but we wanted to start the conversation talking about your old college coach, who is now the Bears offensive quarterback. Offensive coordinator. Jeez, I hope he's not playing quarterback. Mark Helfrich has joined the Bears as offensive coordinator. Are you still in touch with him? Tell us him a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. He's been an incredible part of my life. He's helped me to get to where I'm at today, and we always keep in touch. And he's got a beautiful family, two young kids, and man, he's gonna be a force for you guys. Very lucky for sure.
How so? Why is he so innovative and that offense? You know, everyone tries to imitate it, certainly at the college level and more in the pro level. What is it that he gets done successfully?
Well, I think he puts his players in the best situations, allows guys to just go out there and make plays. I know for us, he did a great job of using tempo and, you know, creating matchups that were in our favor and just creating advantages. And I think he'll do that at this level, and he'll find ways to make you guys roll.
I think it's interesting that the tempo you mentioned, the pace of play, but do those plays work in the NFL? Does that system work in your opinion?
I believe it does. And I think it just creates a lot of communication for a defense. And at the same time, when you add the tempo and you got guys moving around, it just makes it tough on teams. And if you're able to do that and you're able to execute it, I think you can find ways to score some points.
You're going on your third head coach in very short order. For Mitch Trubisky, what was it like for you going from coach number one to Mike Mularkey? And being so young, everyone talks about, you know, having the different schemes and the verbiage and everything goes along with it. What was the biggest difficulty for you to adjust as they made those big changes?
Well, like you said, you got to learn a new scheme. But I think really what it comes down to, you just got to take the time, put the time in, make sure you understand the offense so that when it comes into OTAs and you're rolling with the team, you can go out there and answer questions for the guys and make sure everyone's on the same page.
Do you feel it's hurt your career going through so many different, you know, coordinators, coaches? Is this, You got another system to learn. Is this difficult for you?
No, not at all. Not at all. It unfortunately, the business side of it, you know, things happen. And for me, I just got to roll with the punches and do my best to be the best player that I can be for this organization.
We have one of the Hawaiian legends join us every week, Olin Krutz, and I think you went to the same high school as Olin.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about him? He said he's talked to you. I mean, it's he's a big fan.
Oh, he's unbelievable. For us growing up in Hawaii and you know going to the same high school as him, you know he was a role model, and I thought, you know, he always looked to try to give advice to us young guys and just put us in good situations and always kind of teach. And you know, I felt I learned a lot from him and his family, and we're very fortunate to have him around for sure.
Are you afraid of him as we are?
he's a great man, and you get on his good side and he's probably one of the most loyal people I've ever been around, and he'll definitely take care of you.
And he's one of the toughest guys you're ever going to find on or off the football field. But there's a toughness to your game as well. Do you believe that? And you've overcome injury. You've had some unbelievable numbers, and you've gone through some frustrating periods as well.
Yeah, I ups and downs for sure. But I think that's the nature of this business. And for me, I learn as I go, and every experience is given me just that much more lessons that I can learn from. And it's a brutal game. It's a violent game. And you just always got to kind of roll with it. And, again, I'm very fortunate for all these experiences because I do think it's going to make me a better player in the end.
What is Nick Foles going to go through with facing this Patriots defense, facing this coaching staff? You always say that that Belichick, whenever he's playing a team, he tries to take one thing that they like to do. What was your experience?
Yeah, he's going to have to be prepared for really everything. They do a great job of mixing up their schemes. They do a great job of, like you said, of taking away something that you're good at, and you've got to find ways to score points and execute, getting away from some of those things. So, when it comes down to it, you got to be able to communicate, making sure everyone's on the same page. And in the end, you just got to go out and execute. And I think if they do that, get first downs on first and second down, move the chains on third down, I think they got a shot.
Is this mystique thing a thing where you're on the field and you know that Tom Brady lurks and the fourth quarter is still there and they still have a shot? And if so, how did you combat that during the game?
Really, honestly, I just focused on what was going on defense. You can't control what happens on that side of the ball. You know, you got to believe in what your defense is doing and just hope that you get an opportunity to score points and win the game.
Marcus, I grew up eating Spam. I know you're doing some work with Spam. And a lot of people in Hawaii love Spam. It's certainly
it's a delicacy.
It's one of the great things. What did you? You must have grown up eating Spam, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a part of my life forever, ever since I could remember. And it's fun. It's fun to be working with Spam. It's a great opportunity. Just kind of talk about it. And I mean, we've grown up on it, whether it's Spam and eggs or whether it was like a quick snack like Spam Musubi, which is like almost like a Spam sushi. It's always kind of been around our lives, and it's definitely a good snack or a good go-to meal.
Do you have a preferred way of preparing it?
Spam musubi for sure. So what it is you take like a block of rice and you put Spam on top of it. Do some a couple other things. You wrap it in seaweed, which we call a nori back home, and you can add egg. You can do all sorts of stuff with it. But it's a good little snack. And you know, we always tend to do that around game days and, just kind of use it as a quick bite.
And, this is one of the rare occasions where I think the player actually recruited the company.
No doubt.
A lifetime supply of Spam.
Hey, Marcus, thanks a ton, man. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, no problem. You guys have a good one.
Thanks.
That is Marcus Mariota, the Titans quarterback, and
they just slapped in a couple.
Spam, we're right into
a Monty Python.
Yeah, bit. I know.
But when you're growing up, when we had Spam, it was just like slapped on a couple pieces of bread. There was
No, we didn't cook it. We just ate it.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad grew up in England during the war, and they loved Spam, and I grew up eating Spam. I stopped eating. I ate like a can of Spam when I was about 10, mm-hmm. and that was the last time I've had it.
Yes.
Now he's got me thinking about Spam and Eggs.
It's part of my Y2K rations.
Yeah, you got all the water and all the cans.
It's still in the basement,
All right, Mully and Hanley, we got a lot of fun coming up for you. Don't forget, we're going to be talking to John Paxson at 8 o'clock. We're going to bring in Joe Fortenbaugh next, and we'll talk about some of the interesting wagers you can have on the Super Bowl. We'll get Joe's opinions on some props next. Mully and Hanley on the Score. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Joe Fortenbaugh, our man in Vegas, our man in San Francisco, 95.7 The Game, the Sharp 600 podcast on iTunes. And Joe, this is our favorite segment of the year, according to Dustin, where we talk about the props and the various ones that you have picked out for us. What do you say?
Well, gentlemen, I'll start with a good morning and also an interesting fun fact. This is actually the first in the 7 years that we've been talking together on the airwaves, the Chicago airwaves. This is the first time in 3 years that I've actually been on for the Super Bowl show. Last year, I had my son was born Thursday night, so I wasn't able to come on the next day. And 2 years ago, I got so drunk at a Super Bowl party, there was no way I could do the hit.
And usually you were at the Phoenix Open for part of the weekend too, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. There were at least two instances. That's right. A couple, 3 years ago when I first started here, we did the Phoenix Open, and then a few years before that. Yeah, great memory there, Hanley. But, yeah, oh, my God, that's an event. I'll tell you what.
Wait a minute. I thought you said there were engineering problems, Joe. I thought there was trouble with the engineer on the live remote at the Super Bowl. That was the issue, not that you had a cocktail.
Well, like in the moment, I'm going to lie to you, but now that we can go back and
look right.
at
now,
it.
Yeah, right. Now you're
so
established.
Drunk,
yeah.
I was just, Lowe had a Super Bowl party on Thursday night, and I had no chance of making it through. That was before I was hosting, so I was able to mail that show in.
So when you go into your better X mode and drop a million at, whether it's the Superbook or South Point, is that cash? Do you wire that in? Do you have the big suitcase? How do you do that on Super Bowl week?
You know what's fascinating is that I talked to two different individuals who know about how some of these huge bets are made. And one of them, one of the million-dollar bets on the Eagles, was made via the mobile wagering app. And I was like, who the hell has $1 million in a mobile wagering app? And they go, oh, over the app. So this guy made consecutive $250,000 moneyline bets on the Eagles.
Wow.
Point, the guy who bet $500,000 on the wire that money into the.
All right, Joe, hold on a second, buddy. We're running out. We're going to try to reestablish the connection, and we'll get right to it. Joe is not a credible source on the Eagles because he is from Philadelphia. So, again, emotion gets in the way of your.
He's a better first and foremost, isn't he?
DNA? Maybe he'd be willing to admit that he's not the person to go to for the game. But I think that when you start talking about some of the prop bets, that's better. I was saying, Joe, that you're too much an Eagles fan to really be a credible source for an overall pick on the game. But I imagine you will be pretty good with the props, yes?
Fair point. Very blunt, but a fair point indeed. I would say that
very blunt.
I would say that if we're going to jump into the props, let's start running some of these down. The first thing I'm going to play is the under on 24 total points in the first half. By this point, you guys have no doubt heard that Tom Brady and the Patriots in their 7 Super Bowls with Brady and Belichick have never scored a point in the first quarter. I think you're going to see the same thing from the Eagles. Come out, conservative play, don't make any mistakes early, and by the time you get to the half, you're looking at 24 points, which seems excessive to me. So I'm going to play under 24 total points in the first half, and I'm going to correlate that with a prop bet. Which half will feature more scoring, the first half or the second half? We're going to play the second half having more scoring than the first half. 14 of the last 19 Super Bowls have seen more scoring in the second half than the first half. So right there, just in terms of some scoring props, I'm going to look at that. I'm also going to look under 48.5 total points for the game. My initial gut reaction when the line came out was an over bet, but the more research I've done, the more people I've talked to, I'm leaning under 48.5, although I don't think that needs to be played now. If you like the under, I think come kickoff, the public bettors are going to bet the over like crazy. They're going to knock it up maybe another half point, so you can wait on that one. If you want to talk player props, here's what I'm thinking. First and foremost, Torrey Smith, Eagles wide receiver, over 16.5 total yards for the longest reception of the day. Smith isn't a high-volume target. He's not going to roll up 8 receptions for 100 yards, but he's a big play threat. And in each playoff game this season, he's recorded at least one reception of 20 or more yards. This is just a one-time thing. You need him to catch one pass of 17 or more yards. That's his forte. I think he gets behind coverage at least once in this game. Foles will take a shot. And if the Eagles are trailing late, maybe New England goes into one of those soft prevent defenses and allows a big chunk play to Torrey Smith. So over 16.5 yards on Torrey's longest reception. Now, I talked to a lot of the sharps in Vegas over the last week, and one of the most popular plays is going to be betting against LeGarrette Blount. If you look at what's happened to LeGarrette Blount since Jay Ajayi joined the Eagles, his rushing totals have plummeted. He carried the ball a grand total of 28 times, I believe, in Week 11 and Week 12. And since then, Week 13 through the playoffs, he's averaging just 7 attempts per game. So I'm going to go under on rushing attempts, which is right around 8, under on rushing yards, which is around 28, and under LeGarrette Blount's longest rush, which is about 9.5 yards. Now, I wouldn't fade him on the touchdown prop because if the Eagles get on the 1-yard line, I could see them bringing him in to break the plane. But I am going to go under on attempts, rushing yards, and longest rush. Conversely, I'm going to play the overs on Danny Amendola, the wide receiver from the Patriots. I think the Eagles are going to do a nice job with Rob Gronkowski in this game. The sharps are betting against Gronkowski in terms of total receptions and total yards. They think he might struggle, still might be a bit banged up. I do think Amendola is going to have another nice day, over 52.5 receiving yards, over 4.5 receptions, and then I'll play yes, plus 190 that he scores a touchdown in this game. If you want to talk MVP, I only play long shots here. I'm not going to take an MVP flyer on Nick Foles or Tom Brady. I believe quarterbacks won it 28 times in the 51 Super Bowls. This is basically a bet I view as a lottery ticket. Play a little to win a lot. So if the Eagles win, how are they going to do it? Let's discuss game flow. I would imagine they're going to have to play some pretty good defense. The two Super Bowls in which Tom Brady lost, the only way to rattle Brady is to be able to generate consistent, ferocious pressure with your front four while dropping 7 in the coverage. If you have to blitz, Brady's going to kill you. The Eagles are very good at this. The Eagles should be able to generate pressure with the front four, dropping 7 in the coverage, much like the Giants did to Aaron Rodgers that one year in the playoffs, and then Brady twice in the Super Bowl. So if the Eagles are able to do that, I'll take Fletcher Cox at 40-1, the Eagle defensive tackle to win MVP. I'll also take Brandon Graham, the pass rusher, at 135-1. Two other props that are out there. These are more from an entertainment standpoint. There are a lot of props about Al Michaels and whether or not he'll reference the point spread. I'm playing over on that. You know Al Michaels is always good for at least one. I was talking to Brent Musburger yesterday, and I asked him, you know, if you're in the booth as a gambling guy, you pay attention to this. Would you reference it? He said not only would he reference it, he'd bet it himself. He said he knows.
He can control that, yeah.
He knows Al Michaels' stats guy. His stats guy's been with him for years. They always talk about this stuff. He said anything you see with Michaels over on point spread references, play it. Now, he might not use the word point spread or Vegas or odds. You have to be careful there. But if it's reference to the point spread, definitely play the over. And in that same vein, there's a prop out there where will Al or Chris Collinsworth at any point mention Pro Football Focus? Pro Football Focus is Chris Collinsworth's website. He's not an idiot. He knows how many people are going to be watching this game. He is definitely going to make sure he drops at least one reference. Yes is minus 200. I'm very comfortable laying that price. So
nice. For the most part,
that's what you're looking at.
That's really good. What about the national anthem? Are you going to bet that?
I might by kickoff. Here's the thing. I haven't been able to come across any data. Pink has never done this, as far as anyone can tell, in a public setting. So we can't find any YouTube videos on this. They've got it set at 2 minutes, and the big mistake people make is they go back through history and say, oh, well, 8 of the last 10 anthems have stayed under 2 minutes. That has nothing to do with Pink. Pink sings a completely different style than Luke Bryan, than all these people. So don't use history as a guide for this. Now, maybe because you're on this huge stage and you're a little nervous, you rush through it a little bit more, so I could see that logic. But for Pink, I'm going to wait until Sunday, and I'm probably not going to get the best of it. But the reality of the situation is Someone will find out. I see this every year, so stay on Twitter. Someone will find out what's going to happen with the anthem because someone will have been in the building for her check, her sound check earlier in the day. In addition, someone's going to find out the color of the Gatorade, too. You always see massive amounts of money bet on a color of the Gatorade on game day because someone figures out what's out there.
How much do you wager well before the game? And you said you're waiting on some of these, even the national anthem wagers. Will you wait closer to kickoff? I mean, where's the value in getting in early versus getting in right before the game?
If I'm playing no's or unders, the answer no to these questions, like will this guy score? Will this guy do this? Will this happen? No's and unders, I'll wait because the public does not like to root against scoring. The public does not like to root against action. They want to bet yes on touchdown props. They want to bet yes on explosive things happening. And they want to bet over on player props. So knowing that, I think there's value. In fact, I know there's value in playing no's and unders. So if I like a no or I like an under, like I do with LeGarrette Blount, I might wait until Sunday. If I like the overs, I'm probably playing that earlier in the week. For the Gatorade prop and the national anthem, I have no intention of playing that now unless I come across information. So the reality is, unless I see something surface on Sunday, I'll probably stay away from that.
All righty, Joe. Thank you, buddy. Are you taking the Eagles?
Do you like green? Yeah. Green of money or the green of the Eagles? Which do you like?
All right. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do, and this isn't going to help anybody listening, but I'm going to be completely honest because I've been honest with you guys from day one. So there's no lies and there's no BS here. I grew up in Philly. This has been my team since I was young. Obviously, you get wrapped up in sports media, and you might lose a little bit of fandom. But in this game, one of two things is going to happen. Obviously, they win or they lose. If they win, it's the first Super Bowl of my lifetime. If they lose, it's yet another Philly disappointment. So I'm going to employ what is known as the emotional hedge. I will bet on the Patriots' money line, and one of two things happens after the game. I either lose a little bit of money, but I get the first Super Bowl of my life, or I lose the Super Bowl yet again, but I walk away with some cash in my pocket.
Very nice.
This is not the sharpest way to go about it, but emotionally, as a guy who loves to throw back a few drinks during these games, I will not be able to handle a loss of the game and a loss of money. I will break down. I will probably cry. It will be humiliating. So I'm making sure I walk away with something here, boys.
All righty, Joe. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Joe.
Enjoy the games, everybody. Thanks, guys. Season as always. Look forward to doing it again.
All right, God bless pal. You're the best. That Sharp 600 podcast on iTunes is the place to go for all of Joe's stuff. And we will bring in John Paxson next. We're now the home of the Bulls. The game is tomorrow at 2:15. John Paxson joins us next to tell us about the big trade. Mully and Haley on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.